Well, good morning. It's good to see you all here today, and I want to thank you all for inviting me here to speak to you about an issue that has plagued this country for many years. I'm Wallace Kennedy Shepherd, Jr. My father worked with Martin Luther King, and he actually walked with him and talked to him. They had meetings at our house in Northern California when he came up to be with Cesar Chavez. And also, I met Martin Luther King at the age of 8 years old and in our living room. So I've been around the movement all my life, because my father was a very strong activist in it, and he just kind of rubbed off on me. So I wrote a poem once, and it was right after Martin Luther King died, and it said, "Black world, black sky, black is the cold beat. White world, white sky, white is the cold beat." I was 9 years old when I wrote that poem, and my father said to me, "Oh, how do you know what you're saying?" And at that particular time, I said, "I know what I'm saying because what they've done is taken Martin Luther King and made a martyr out of him, so now we are going to have to advance from where we were to where we can possibly go." And at the same time, there's people on both sides of the equation that have serious issues with each other. So when I say cold beat, back then I remember a song, "The Beat Goes On." And that's how the beat came into it. But that particular poem was published across the nation in most papers when I was a kid. Went from New York to California. Some of you may have seen it, and some of you may have not, but it made a difference in my life, and that's how I ended up heading down the path that I'm on today. Yes? Sure. "Black world, black sky, black is a cold beat. White world, white sky, white people, white is a cold beat." So it was an even-sided thing, showing that there was problems on both sides, but there was also people struggling on both sides. So with all that said, I want to get to this racism problem that we have in America. Racism in today's time in the United States of America, what does it look like? Is it really something that you can see every day? If you're black, if you're Hispanic, if you're Muslim or any other race in America besides white, we don't know what it's like to be free white in 21. Now, that was an expression used back in 1963 with a movie that was out. It was a controversial movie, true story, about a black man that was accused of raping a white woman in Dallas, Texas. And that phrase has kind of stuck with black people along the line ever since then. We don't know what it's like to be free white in 21. Yet, the same connotation rings today that there is a freedom that white people have that blacks don't have when they walk down the street to go into a store or go somewhere that is like an everyday thing to do, but we feel the pressures of society all around us. However, I must admit that I can say that I have felt that same freedom, but it was not in this country. It was when I went to Nigeria, Africa for the first time, and I stepped off the plane, and for many days I walked around, and as I walked I could see all the people, and I talked to people, and as soon as I opened my mouth, they knew that I was from America. They said, "Oh, you're American." I said, "Yes." And I still couldn't figure out what was different. What was it that I was feeling that just, I felt like I could breathe. I couldn't understand it. Until one day, I walked in a restaurant, and there sitting at the counter was one white man sitting there eating. And I said, "Wow, that's what it is. There's no white people here." And then I realized that I could walk around and feel like everybody else and not have the pressures that are on me when I'm in my own country. Now, I may be black, but I'm not African. I'm from America, which means I am an American. And when I traveled to other countries, I found out the same thing, that people don't say to me when I've traveled to Israel and Amman, Jordan, the West Bank, the many different places I've traveled to, they don't say to me, "You're African American." As soon as they hear me speak, they say, "Oh, you're American." Now, it's that way all over the world, but not here. In this country, we have to labelize and separate, and we started out by even saying it in the first place, that I'm an African American, I'm an Asian American, I'm Hispanic American, and all of that should go out the window. That's part of the problem right there. And when I finally realized that freedom was like taking a breath of fresh air. Freedom was a feeling that I'd never felt before. I never felt so unconstricted. And I said, "Wow, that's what it's like to be free white in 21 in America." But it was like, I have asthma, and it was like I just got a pill that corrected my asthma, and I never had to take an inhaler again. That's what it was like. And I said, "You know, everybody on this earth, anybody that is black needs to go to Africa so they can find out what it's really like to be free. Because we do have a freedom here, and this still is the greatest country in the world. I love America, and this is the only place that I want to live." Now, granted, going to Africa was a great experience. I loved it. But I was happy to come home. Because here I can still do the things that I want to do and not worry about really what I'm doing, long as I'm doing it legally. Well, one of the things that I noticed when I got back is that the noose that was around my neck when I left, that got taken off of my neck when I got to Africa, now all of a sudden came back. I said, "Wow, I feel the tension again. I feel the pressures again." I really don't worry about when I walk down the street in Santa Barbara. Not anymore. But when I first got here, I had to worry, because when I first got here, I got pulled over 4 times by the police in 1 month and had no reason to be pulled over. They said to me, "Well, you know, what are you doing here?" I said, what do you mean, what am I doing here? They said, well, you're driving up here on the Mesa. I said, I live here. And they said, well, the problem with that is we've never seen you before. I said, isn't this still free America? I should be able to go anywhere I want to go, unless it's a military base and it's restricted, or something like going to somebody's building that is locked up. I said, but I'm on the street, driving down the street with my own self, just going home. Well, we ended up having meetings and everything else, and we had a meeting down at my church at Second Baptist, and it was full of all types of people. And matter of fact, we had so many officials there. Mayor Bloom said that if we had one more city council meeting, one more city council member, this would be an official meeting. So. What I like to do is try to look at the problems and try to create something to solve the problems, make sure that we have a solution to the problems. But there's some things that you can't solve, but there's things that you can work on. So at that particular time, we asked that the police chief bring his sergeants and also bring the city manager down and talk to us so we can get a solution. And thank God for the meeting, because right now Santa Barbara has the only, out of that meeting came the first black chaplain in Santa Barbara Police Department, who was Chuck Reed. So he actually works with the police department now, prays with the police, and it really slowed up some of the problems that we had there. But anyway, let me get back to this. I didn't worry when I got back about the problem, but even though I felt it. But this is what got me, is that when I got back here, I found out that here it is again, that I was going back into the same era where I would go into a store and I would see a white woman in the store, and as soon as she saw me, she'd clutch her purse and bring it close up to her and look at me like I'm going to do something. And I'd say, well, you don't have to worry, I'm a minister, you know. And then she'd look at me kind of funny, but this is what happens all the time. There's a pressure. Here's the thing. What do we do? What do we think in a country when we still hear the words nigger, spick, kike, chink, and other derogatory terms? Words that can turn the heads of anyone that has a pure heart from wanting to have togetherness to end up turning them to a bad attitude. Words that create uncertainty in others. I was blessed to grow up in a community that really didn't have much diversity in culture, but it was a community that looked at everyone as equals, at least until you turned 18. I grew up in Marin County. Wonderful place. I think it's one of the best places in the world to grow up. And here it is that as I grew up there, with it being the third richest county in the United States when I did grow up there, the children, my fellow students, never once called me out of my name. Never once looked at me any different than them. Because in Marin at that particular time, we didn't have separatism. At that particular time, we didn't have the racism that we see today. It's gotten worse. It hasn't gotten better. It's gotten better on some lines where we have a black president, but as soon as he went into office, the whole world fell apart. people started saying, oh my God, we've got to get our country back. Where'd it go? But there was no racism in the children, because we loved each other. We dealt with each other as individuals. And that went along until my 18th birthday. And on my 18th birthday, I found that the world of togetherness went out the window, and all of a sudden I found out I was black. Growing up in Marin, I didn't even see color. We just seen each other as friends. We talked, we walked, we did everything together. Matter of fact, I was the president of my class from the 7th grade all the way till I graduated from high school, voted most likely to succeed, was in student congress and went got an award from President Nixon for helping with the drug problem in Marin County. Did all that at my young age, and the thing that got me was that we never had a problem till my 18th birthday. Now, I was going out with a white girl for 2 years. And we had this great big birthday party at her house up on the hill in Larkspur, California, because we had moved down from Novato to Larkspur. And then here it is, we're on the hill partying, having a good time, and she comes in and she says, my dad wants to see you in his study. I said, whoa, okay. He talked to me several times. We'll go. He says, and when I get to the study, he says, I got something to tell you, and I don't want you to take it the wrong way. I said, what do you mean? He said, I got something to tell you, and it's important, and I know you might get a little upset, but if you hear me out, you'll understand. I said, okay, what is it? He says, my daughter, he said, you just turned 18, and my daughter's going to turn 18 in a month. And you've treated my daughter good. I really like you as a young man. You've really done some good things. You've never disrespected my daughter. And I'm really happy that you've been her boyfriend. I said, oh, thank you. He said, but look, I got to tell you the truth. I can't have my daughter thinking it's okay for you to marry her, so you can't see my daughter anymore. I was devastated. I started crying. Drove home, left the party, and I drove home and I'm crying, tears are coming down my eyes, and I tell my dad, I said, hey, look, Dad, I can't believe what I was told. And he said, what were you told? And I told him what happened. He says, welcome to America. He said, it's time for you to grow up. Marriage wasn't even on our minds. You know, she was going to go to school, I was going to go to school, but it woke me up. It's not out in public is where the problem starts, but it's in the interiors of the bedroom communities where training takes place with our children, when words of segregation are used to show young people that there is a difference between blacks, whites, Hispanics, Mexicans, everybody. There's a difference between you. And what I found out when I grew up in Marin County, because I was so well accepted, I was privy to conversations that a lot of people weren't privy to. And people, one thing that I noticed, that if you're around people enough, they tend to get colorblind and they can't see the color in you anymore, because it's a natural thing, because people love people, and when they're around people long enough, they accept them for who they are. And pretty soon they said, you're different from the rest of them, Wallace. And so when they would start talking about African Americans or blacks, whatever you want to call it, I never know what to call somebody today, because you got to be politically correct all the time. But what I found out is that they would talk about blacks like they had a tail and forget I was standing there. And then they look at me and they say, oh, but not you. Not you, because you've been around us. You know how things are. But the problem starts with the suggestions that people make to children when they're young. And the culture of superiority develops with young children through their parents. They tell them, you are great, you're the best, you're the greatest, nobody else is better than you, and all of our money says so. My friends are still my friends from Marin. Talk to them all the time. We haven't changed. But if they go to talk to somebody else black, it's a different world. They treat me different than they treat any other blacks that they're around. But growing up there brought me a blind eye to society, but until I moved to New York, and when I got to New York and I found out that, hey, this thing called racism is real. We can only stop this if we allow ourselves to change in the inside and not spread the bad stuff to our children on the outside, because it's internalized, and once it's internalized, it is repetitive. Do you know that if every person in this world decided to say to their children, everybody's equal, for one generation, it would all change? We can't do that because we love our superiority. We have to make America great again. Oh boy. Race problems begin in the minds of race problems begin because people fool the minds of the innocent. But now what we have is a covert disenfranchisement that keeps minorities in poverty on a day-to-day basis. But what is worse than that is that the police department in most counties have been given the green light to kill blacks on the spot instead of talking out problems, instead of seeing if we can work a situation out. You know, I'm a member of a group called Faith-Based Reconciliation here in Santa Barbara. And I was amazed at the difference between what we think about, how we think about police, how white people think about police, and how blacks think about police. White people, they think about police, well, when they get pulled over, they go, oh, I must have did something wrong. What did I do? But blacks, when they get pulled over, they say, uh-oh. Got to put both hands on the steering wheel. Got to make sure I say yes, sir, no, sir. I better not look too quick. Because the fear comes over them that they don't know what's going to happen to them. They don't know if they're going to get shot or if they're going to get beat up. I have a scar on my forehead right here from when I was 16 years old. Marin County, I got pulled over by a police officer. I was driving a Fiat 124 Spider that my parents bought for me. Really nice little convertible job. The police officer was named Officer Piru. He didn't like the fact that I was driving a sports car. When he pulled me over, he said, whose car is this? And I said, it's mine. Told me to get out the car. I got out the car, and he said, go to the front of my car. I walked to the front of the police car, and as I walked to the front of the police car, he grabbed me by the back of the head and slammed my head into the hood. At 16 years old, Officer Piru. Never forget him. But we never know what's going to happen from day to day with the police. Black men especially. And then another thing that gets us is that we are economically disenfranchised all the time. And it's even proven here in Santa Barbara. You can go up and down State Street and you probably will not find too many blacks working for any of the mom and pop shops here. Not too many. You have one store. But in the small stores, there's none. So the question is how can you change things if you're not willing to work with everybody? We've got to be willing to work with each other because we love one another and treat each other with respect. We need an equal playing field. Now, I keep hearing that, I know that, and everything else, and it's not going to be because you got people with money and people without. I went to I don't know if you know Barbara Aramba. She's the athlete here that went to the Olympics from UCSB. I was invited to a fundraiser with her. Because, you know, I sponsor. She goes to our church. And so I was invited to the fundraiser. And when I got there, I walked in the house. And this is a nice big house up in Hope Ranch. Real, real big. You know, guy's house is so big, you can put part of this in it. You know, so. But, and the strange thing about it was, is that when I got there, I was the only black person there besides Barbara, who's on the team. And the only people that spoke to me was the people that were on the team with Barbara. Even the owner of the house wouldn't speak to me. And I even said hello, and he just walked away. Now, if it's my house, if somebody walks into my house, I don't care who they are, I want to know who they are. Hello, how you doing? What's your name? Yeah. But this guy dismissed me completely. So until we can get to the point where we're not dismissing each other, until we can get to the point where we can look at each other and say, hey, look, hey, there's love in your heart and there's something good inside of you, we're always going to have this problem. You know, Nelson Mandela, I like what he said, and I quote, he says, no one is born hating another person because... no one is born hating another person because of the color of his skin or has backgrounds or his background or his religion. No one is born hating another person because of the color of his skin or his background or his religion. People must learn to hate. And if they can learn to hate, they can be taught to love. For love comes more naturally to the human heart than the opposite, end quote. You know, people as a whole are good. They are good. They want to do good. They want to help people. Yet there's always seems to be those that will turn the peace into unrest for no other good reason but they want to generate hatred. My heart is full of compassion for those that will stand up for the truth. Yet at the same time, we must recognize the pain and despair that we see in the eyes of American victims of hatred. I got a question. What have I done to you as white people for you to hate me? What have I done to you that you have to have racism against me? don't like bad people at all, but I pray for them. I don't like people that to hurt anyone in any type way or fashion. If they're like that, I don't want to be around them either. But we're good people. Y'all seem to help, right? You know, the day that movie, when it came out, I went and seen it, and there was a white lady sitting in front of me, and everything that happened bad to the black people, she would laugh. And I looked at her and I said, she's very interesting. But the thing is that we are a good people and we are a great people just like everybody else. Yet if we don't recognize that what makes this country great is the diversity that we have in each other, we're going to lose the great battle of greatness. This country at one time stood up and worked together. We do it during World War I. We do it through World War II. When things get real tough, we come together. When the towers went down, people didn't care if you're black or white, Chinese or whatever you were. We worked together, and if we can do that in crisis, why can't we do that on a day-to-day basis? We've got to be careful that we don't let the clock turn back to the Jim Crow era. And if we keep the clock turning back, with this type of discontented polarization that we see on TV every day, especially in this election, craziest thing I've ever seen. If we keep that going, then the next thing we'll know is that we become vulnerable to every other country around us. The greatest thing about America is that we're different and we're made up of different people. And because we're made up of different people and we work together as a unit to do things, we've been able to accomplish more in this country than other countries. It's because we work together. But the racism is getting in the way and it's starting to come back up again. That's going to hurt this country. I love this country. And I know everybody in here loves it. Go to other countries, you're going to love it here. I don't like it when I go to a country and the power goes off. And I got to deal with mosquitoes. No, don't like it. But we have to be careful that we don't let the evil take over. Because this country will lose the battle against good and evil if we do. With evil making a brand new head rise, it's hard for us to get on the right track again. It was Cornel West that said, "The country is in deep trouble. We've forgotten that a rich life consists fundamentally of serving others, trying to leave the world a little bit better than we found it. We need the courage to question the powers that be, the courage to be impatient with evil and patient with people. The courage to fight for social justice. In many instances, we will be stepping on nothing and just hoping to land on something. But that is the struggle. To live in the wrestling of despair, to have the last word," end quote. We are all good people with plenty to contribute to this great nation. But if we continue to hold fast to the overt and covert values of racism, then we will be defeated. We'll lose our greatness. And the gift that is our greatest gift, which is diversity, we will be reaching for it and not be able to find it. I see people reaching across color lines all the time now. And it's good to reach across color lines. But don't do it on a temporary basis. Do it on an everyday basis, where we won't live in shame, but we can live understanding that because we've crossed the diversity line, that we're able to unite together as one unit and live, but not in separatism. But until we get it right in this country, what I'm going to do is continue fighting for the things that I think is right. Continue hoping to have a church that is not all black, but full of everyone in it. And I'm going to stand and say, and listen to the song that Marvin Sapp, where he said, he saw the best in me when everyone else around could only see the worst in me. God bless you.
Thank you, Reverend Shepherd. And I think that the Reverend Shepherd just enumerated some of the things that we are about at Word and Life. We're about the healing of what's wrong, the healing of the nations, the healing of slavery. And I'm wondering if one of the things that might help, if you would invite us to come to your church.
Sure.
For a welcome.
Yes, anytime you want to, you can come to our church. Our church, I've got a white drummer, half-white and half-Filipino pianist. we're just mixed up over there, full of different folks. But come to our church, Second Baptist Church. We call it Second Baptist Church, God's Open Door. And we call it God's Open Door because nobody is excluded in our church. It's at 1032 East Mason Street. Right down, if you know where the McDonald's is over by the, on Memphis, you make go up toward the hills and we're on the right hand side, right across the street from Franklin School.
What time?
11 o'clock. Still the most segregated hour in America.
11 o'clock on Sunday morning.
Yes.
All right. Thank you very much, the Reverend Reverend Wallace Kennedy Shepherd. We want to thank so much the Orange Group for their delicious and plentiful treats at the break. And next week, the Green Group is up. If you have a green sign on your ticket, you're responsible. Thank you to the Reverends Moore and Shepherd. They're both still here. And we hope you come to join us for the rest of our series. We're going to have about 3-4 more series on Thursday morning. We'd love to have you come. Next week, on October 20th, we will welcome our own Pat McClure. And Pat is here. And by the way, Pat is the gal who recommended Stephen's book, Sacred America, Sacred World, to us. So it's up to, she is the reason that we did that book. So she's going to be talking next Thursday, and the title of her talk is on the next page. It's called, she will speak on chapters 13 and 14, Family and Learning, the Core Carriers of Sacred Evolution. Thanks so much, everybody. See you next Thursday.